Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning once again. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, September 29th. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. You know what I was thinking? I got an idea the other day that we should do one show when you sit here and you run the show.
Great.
Would you like that?
Sure.
Okay. I'll sit in the co-host seat and it should be cool, you know? What do you think?
I think it'll be interesting. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be cool, but we'll see how that goes.
Why? I'll show you how to run it, and we can do it. You know, once you start your show maybe or something, you know.
Great.
Maybe if you feel more comfortable with it. Because it's like sometimes I like to sit in the other seat and stuff, you know.
Great.
Give
Let's
you
do
an
it.
Experience of what it's like.
Perfect.
Yeah. So let's see what's going on. So for those of you who don't know, Jen is going to start her own show here a week from tomorrow called It's Complicated.
Yep.
With your friend Lauren Leonelli.
Yep.
And so tell us a little bit about what the show is going to be about. We might as well promote it.
It's going to be about dating and relationships and what happens like when you use online dating or once you start seeing somebody, if you want to stop seeing somebody, and just like the normal issues that we face, I guess, being single or getting into new relationships.
Okay. So, and you're in the dating scene too, so you're able to comment on these things.
Sure am.
Yeah.
I definitely
the way you
am.
Say it is funny.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I definitely can comment on a lot of things. I mean, there are things that come up daily and we like take notes of it because it's like if it's a conversation that I'm having with Lauren, every girlfriend is having it with their own girlfriends, you know? So like
that's true, yeah.
Even from like etiquette from like texting or like dating apps or like when somebody should call or not call, what they should say when they call.
Yeah. People should know those things.
Yeah, like
right?
If you start seeing somebody like who you're following on Instagram matters. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, there's an activity feed. If you're liking a bunch of girls' photos with, like, big butts and, like, that are half naked on Instagram and you're outwardly liking their photos, like, I'm not going to like you.
Really?
I'm sorry. Have better judgment. No, because it's one thing if you follow them, but you don't have to go like their photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Usually that's a sign of somebody, like, trying to get a girl's attention. So if you like 9 of their photos, maybe they'll notice you.
Yeah, I mean, when they post those photos, they get, like, hundreds of likes, you know?
Right,
because
which is
it's
why,
so predictable.
Which is why people go and like 9 of them, so that will show up on their feed and hopefully get their attention.
Yeah.
I was seeing a guy, like, I don't know how long ago, but, like, on my activity feed, I would notice he liked, like, all of these girls' photos. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah, where does it leave me, you know?
No, but it's like, they're not going to like you.
Yeah.
You liking their photos isn't going to make them like you. Like, yes, they might notice you're liking their photos, but you're one of their many fans.
Right.
Like, the fact that you even can consider or fathom that they're going to like you because you just liked all their photos, like,
yeah,
dude.
Exactly. It's a big assumption there, you know. Usually they post the photos because they like themselves a lot, you know. Don't you think?
Yes, that is unrelated, but that is a separate.
Why is that?
Because
related?
What I'm saying is that they use this as a tactic to get the girl to notice them.
Right, okay.
Has nothing to do with what the girl posts. It's what the fact that
no,
he actually
what
thinks.
What I'm saying is what she thinks when she posts it. You know, I don't think she, you know, she's looking for guys to like.
I mean, right, she might be, but it's not going to be you that's one of 500,000.
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
just not.
Right.
So the fact that, like, I can't date somebody that in their mind it crossed their, like, synapses that's like, if I like this girl's 9 photos mm-hmm. and I show up on her activity feed that I'm going to be noticed by her and then we're going to date and I can get that girl.
Yeah.
Like, really? Come back down to earth and be with normal people.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? So it's just things like
so
that.
So those are things like that, and I guess people need to realize that other people see this.
Right. Well, so here's the thing. When you're, like, talking to your girlfriends, and you're like, I want to write a manual on how to do dating and, like, teach people a lesson. Like, remember that time we were talking about how I wish these dating apps had, like, a function where you could give feedback?
Right.
Well, then I remembered I have a radio show. So
yeah.
I'm like, I can do that there.
Exactly.
I don't have to write a book, and I don't have to give feedback through an app.
Yeah.
I can just talk about you on the radio.
That's true. That's true. So, folks, you You can catch the show Wednesdays at 12 at noon Pacific time, right here on LA Talk Radio. And I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks,
you know?
Me too.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a cool show. And if you guys have seen any of the episodes of Two Drunk Girls, you know what to expect pretty much. And that's a lot of fun and funny.
It is.
Right?
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
In fact, actually, somebody just yesterday reached out to Lauren and I to use one of our Two Drunk Girls videos on their blog. They want to repost it and like,
wow.
We're like, okay.
There you go. That's how things started going viral.
Right. Well, it's the Daily Mail. Will. The Daily Mail wants to post it.
Really?
Yeah. They reached out to us yesterday. We're
wow.
like,
wow. Jen, know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Which episode was it?
Do you know? It's the one of us like using a matchmaker service to find somebody.
Oh, okay.
Where we fill out each other's profiles.
Oh, I think I remember that one. That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Thanks.
Yeah. You guys can catch that on twodrunkgirls.net. And so obviously Jen has a lot of content for you guys to consume. And I highly recommend it. I think
it's
funny. You guys both have great sense of humor. Every post you guys do, it seems like you think... you always think up something funny and clever to say with it.
Thank you.
You know, so people do notice, Jen.
Seems that way.
Yeah, people notice.
It's a slow build, but hey.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Right. But, you know, I mean, talking about dating and how people sometimes don't know what the other sex thinks and stuff. My son was telling me yesterday, he's in college up north. So he works at the coffee shop there. They have like a Starbucks-like place. So he stands there and, you know, and he talks to people. He says, I see everybody, you know, from the school and all that stuff. And a lot of hot chicks, in his words. So he said he went to this parade. They had like a leather parade in San Francisco.
Okay.
You know, like the gay leather parade or something.
Okay.
So he says everybody goes to it, you know. So he went and he saw this girl that he knew. So he started talking, or that he didn't know her. He just seen her at the coffee shop, and he said he really wanted to hit on her, but he never would because he's working, you know.
Mm.
So, and he says she never really paid attention to him or anything, you know, never said anything to him. So he says he ran into somebody who he knew who turned out to be her friend. And she tells him, she says, that girl really got the hots for you. And he says, are you kidding me? You know, she never even pays attention to me in anything. So they ended up hooking up, you know. So and they told him, they said, oh, no, I mean, everybody knows around school you're the hot guy at the coffee place.
Well, that's cool for him.
I know. And he says, I didn't realize I was a celebrity at the school. I said, yeah, so many people see you. But the bottom line is, and the reason I brought this up is people have to understand often what you think the other person thinks, it's not true at all.
Right.
It's what you think they think.
Right.
Right? And so that's why you got to muster up courage and I think always go after what you want, you know. And I think, if nothing else, I think pretty women often don't have as many people approach them because people are afraid, you know, or hesitant that they'll be rejected or whatever. I don't know why a rejection from a very beautiful woman is any different from a rejection from any other woman, but some people look at it that way.
I guess so.
Yeah. So in a few minutes, we're going to have our guest joining us here in the studio. So we were talking about Facebook. Did you hear about, where is it? There's a couple of hoaxes going on. I mean, did you notice how everybody again started posting, like, you can't use my pictures?
Yeah, it's annoying.
Facebook, yeah,
my
and all that
it.
Stuff, right?
No.
So, but there's another one that says that they're going to start charging you for the to be a member there unless... if you want to keep your status to private, you'd have to pay $5.99. And people are saying that's a hoax. There's no way. And in fact, they're saying in the page Facebook terms and conditions, it says you own all of the content and information you post on Facebook, and you can control how it is shared through your privacy and application settings.
Right.
And they're saying they're never going to charge for it. So there you go, folks. You know, don't believe everything you read.
No, it's so annoying. People need to stop posting that on Facebook.
I know. I know.
I would never.
Yeah. I know. People post all kinds of things. I don't know what's going on with them. It's also National Coffee Day today, and many places are giving out free coffee.
Oh, that's good to know. I need more coffee. I'm, like, tired.
Really?
One was not going to do it today.
Oh. You had a late night?
It wasn't late. It was the night before I didn't sleep, and so then last night I was catching up.
Okay.
And so they say, what is it? You catch up on two nights ago. Like, every 2 days you're catching up on, like, the two nights before.
Really? Yeah. So, so what about the people that say you can never catch up to sleep?
I don't know what they're talking about.
Right. Because you can be a little more rested when you sleep more, right?
Right.
Yeah. I know. I should know. I went to bed at 3:30 last night.
Why?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always the same thing. I work, and now I'm working with people in India, so I have to stay up late to communicate with them.
You could go to sleep and then wake up early.
That doesn't work. I can't get up early if I don't have to, you know.
Well, if you have to talk to the people in India.
But it would be the same thing. I'd still get the same amount of sleep if I got up early instead. You know, if I went to sleep at 1 or 2 and got up at 5.
No, you could go to sleep at like 10 and wake up at 3.
There's no way I can sleep at 10, Jen. I just get home at 10 from here.
Every single night?
Just about.
I thought that you trained somebody to do this job.
I did, but I would have to hire another person to do that. Right now, I just had people filling in for me, covering for me while I was gone on vacation.
I thought you had trained somebody anyway.
No, I did train them, but it's not like we have time. We only have 2 engineers. You need more.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, but I'm excited. I mean, our new app, the Android, came out already. I'm not going to tell people where to find it yet because I'm waiting for the iPhone to. But it's going to be awesome. And then
the new apps. And then so when's the website?
And the website is, it's winding down. I mean, we're getting there.
Great.
We're getting there. It's going to be awesome. It'll be worth the wait once it's done. So, So I'm staying up late. But at any rate,
When is the page for It's Complicated going to be up?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot on the air.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say the next day or two. How's
great.
That? Does that sound
That's
good?
That's going to be great because then we can promote it before our show goes live.
That's true,
so
yeah.
So people know how to listen and find us and
okay,
stuff.
Okay, we'll be glad to set you up then.
Great.
All right.
Can't wait.
So just by the way, with the coffee thing, you know, we think we drink a lot of coffee, but really the coffee culture here, I think, started or got a big boost when Starbucks came around. And but, you know, drinking coffee, obviously, at least in Europe and South America, is very popular. So they just wanted to show here there's a little table of the consumption. And the U.S. is number 25 on the list of who knows how many countries as far as the amount of coffee we consume. So the top countries are like Finland, Sweden, Netherlands, Norway. So you can see a lot of Scandinavian, North European countries are doing that. Belgium, Denmark. So that's interesting why they drink more coffee there than anywhere else. But Finland, according to my calculation here, drinks 3 times as much as we do. And they're saying that often people have an average of maybe 2 coffees a day or something. But there's also a related article that talks about the health effects of coffee. And they're saying that, you know, obviously they say more is good for you. Obviously not excessive or anything. But they're saying a few cups is pretty good.
Why? What does it do for you?
It says it reduces the risk from everything from melanoma to heart disease. And I don't know why it does, but that's what they're saying. You know,
Is it the caffeine?
It could be. It could be. But they're saying something about something that in other countries, they failed to catch a compound called cafestol or something, the oily part of the coffee that can increase your bad cholesterol. So that's not what it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I don't understand the mechanics of this, but the bottom line is I shouldn't feel so guilty about drinking.
No, now I won't
4 cups, yeah. But I got to tell you, when I went up north, my friend drank so much coffee, I couldn't even believe it.
Really?
Like, yeah.
What did he have to be awake for?
He's not doing it to be awake. He's doing it just because he likes coffee, I guess. But it's way excessive, you know. I told him, you're extreme with that. But then again, you know, I do extreme things too, like smoke cigarettes. So.
Right. But you're going to stop.
I'm going to stop. I just have to really stop for a moment and talk myself into it and say, this is it, no more. Yeah. Anyway, let's bring in our guest who's sitting here patiently. We have Bruce Naxon in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And Bruce was referred by a friend. And you make movies, right?
I try my best.
Right. Is that something you do professionally?
Sadly, no. I moved out to Los Angeles to try to get involved in the film industry and instead fell into technology, which has been wonderful, beautiful in the way that dealing with other people's computer crap can only be.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So recently I've tried to make the transition to do what I wanted to do versus what I've been forced to do.
Right.
And my current project is yet another step along the way.
Awesome. So you said you moved here. Where from?
Oh, I'm a Philly boy.
Oh, Philly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And proud.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, we throw
the city of brotherly
bottles at
love,
Santa,
you know,
and sports stadiums. How do you not be proud of that kind of social interaction?
That's true, yeah. And Pennsylvania has a lot of history to it, too, you know, which is pretty cool.
I think we kind of invented history for America.
You think?
We're one of the big five.
Right, absolutely. It's interesting how, you know, they started with 13 colonies and then it started expanding more and more, you know, and so the original ones are really where most of the action is in this country, you know, in the East Coast. So that's interesting. How long ago did you move here?
I moved here about 9 years ago.
And what were you doing there before you wanted to get into movies?
In Philadelphia?
Right.
Well, that's where I fell into acting. I met somebody. I was doing computers, and I wanted to do something more creative. So I went back to school just to see what I could find out, tried to go into fine woodworking, discovered I was allergic to most trees and sawdust.
Really?
Not the best outcome for someone who wants to get into fine woodworking, and just
right.
tried to find something else that was creative. Ended up in the acting track, discovered I was god-awful at it. I mean, horrible. But I managed to get into the union, and I met somebody who was brilliant. She was beautiful. She should have been a star. And she lived out here for a little bit, but she didn't try it at all. She moved out here, was paralyzed, didn't do anything.
Right.
And went back east with her husband and kind of lived a very quiet life. And I thought that was kind of sad. It also made me wonder, what if you try?
Yeah.
You got one life.
What if you try? I like that.
Yeah. What if you try?
Like, why not me, right? That's mm-hmm. what they say.
Oh, I know why not me, but I'm gonna fight against that anyway.
So you've been a creative type from the beginning, pretty much, right?
Yeah, as a kid, I would write. I guess one of the most formative things that happened to me is my dad took me to see Star Wars at one point, and I then began writing lots and lots of science fiction and these little stories. And into my teenage years, I then fell into music for a while, and that's where my creativity was focused, but music didn't happen. And then I needed an outlet for my creativity. And then the idea of acting and then producing came about.
Right.
And so that's where that energy began being focused.
That's cool. And so you kept your day job, obviously, when you were
yeah.
doing that. That's an important thing. Some people don't realize
this stuff
that.
Is expensive.
Yeah.
You need to pay for it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also when you move here, you just have to pay for your bills, you know? I mean, you know, you got to get a real job, and many people don't understand that, you know. They move out here, hang up a shingle, and say, I'm an actor.
The attrition rate when you get out here is awful. Most people move out here with this big dream, very little resources, and actually very little idea about what the industry really looks like versus what they see on TV.
My mom still asks me if I got discovered today. Like every day. Did you get discovered?
And did you?
Yes, every single day.
Beautiful.
I'm super famous, like in the 20s when you just walk down the street and you're a star.
God, that just makes me so jealous. I'm going to push her down the elevator shaft. I mean, congratulations.
Thanks. Tell my mom.
So, yeah, it takes a while. I mean, look, Jen has managed to stay here in this town. And like you said, not many people do. You know, there's a lot of attrition here. People come here with their dreams, like you said. They find out that nobody's really waiting for them. With
no.
a red carpet.
You have to do it yourself.
Not only do you have to do it yourself, you have to understand what you're trying to do. Mm. A lot of people don't understand how this, how I said it before, how the acting industry works. That it's not just a matter of getting auditions or you find an agent and, oh, this guy's going to make this world, this whole world happen for you. And it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of self-promotion. It's a lot of trying to understand what the needs are, where you fit in and what you can do.
Right.
And a lot of times, very much like you're doing, Jen, you have to find your own projects. You have to make your own, you've got to make your own lever to wedge yourself in.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, you got to have the initiative, I think, to be able to stand out and have something to offer, you know. So did you start it? I mean, so you started acting in school, actually?
Yes and no. I went back to find something. So I wouldn't say, it's not like I went to Lee Strasberg and studied for 4 years. I went to a community college, and instead of doing fine woodworking, I took the acting classes. I decided, okay, I'm going to make it as an actor, got my union status really quick and discovered that Philly, for as union as a town as it is, and it is a union town.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. You can't walk down the street without a Teamster kneecapping you. it just, not so much for acting, at least not 10 years ago. So it was either go to New York or come here, and right. I hate winter, so.
Yeah, there you go. So you made the move to Hollywood.
I did.
Did your family support you in that?
My mother has been unbelievably supportive about everything I do. This is very heartwarming and disgusting, and everybody feel free to feel nauseous, but I truly am the star in my mother's sky.
That's awesome.
She just absolutely positively loves me in a way that makes my brother want to stab me.
Really? Sibling rivalry. There you go.
Yeah, it's true. I'm the dreamer. I was the good kid. I didn't do anything bad. I didn't do anything wrong. I just had dreams, and I would pursue them. Yeah. And my brother hung out.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. My brother is a good dude. He's also a hell of a cook, a hell of a chef.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he older than you?
No, he's younger.
No, he's younger than you.
Yes.
Do you have any other siblings?
No, just the one.
Oh, really? Okay. Were you guys close when you grew up?
We had a contentious childhood. We got close when I went into my later teens, mm-hmm. when I first started working and began giving him money, because nothing works on little brothers like bribing. So we got close then, and then sadly because and by the way, when you were talking about your dating show and all that online stuff, I was just having PTSD flashbacks. I was just remembering the fun horrors that online dating brings. So good luck on your show.
Thanks.
So let's talk a little about online dating. Why are you saying that? I mean, have you tried online dating and been disappointed?
Well, I wouldn't say disappointed. I was actually fairly successful at it. Mm. You know, everybody... Maybe not everybody, but people who are successful at eventually get their methodology of how to make it work for them. Mm. And I'm not saying that what I did would work for everybody, but eventually I kind of boiled down I mostly did OkCupid.
Mm. It matches you up, or it offers matches for you, right?
It offers matches. It was free, which was a bonus plus that had like now it's been bought by Match, and it has the same kind of membership scale. Mm. But at the time, it had like an A-list where for like $3, basically you wouldn't how OkCupid would work is you would look at someone's profile and your name would show up on their profile as having looked at them.
Oh, okay.
And then the next person would look and you'd move down the list until you fell off it.
Right.
So if you looked at them again, back at the top of the list, which may not be a good thing, because if you look at somebody 4 or 5 times, now I would need to do that before I wrote them, because I just wanted to formulate a decent introduction email. And I would need to refer back, and I'd think about it before I contacted somebody, because I didn't just want to go like, hey, babe, nice tits, what's up? because, as Jen will tell you, that's very successful for no person.
No people.
No people whatsoever.
No people.
So I would go back, but I didn't want them seeing that I was going back, because I didn't want to look like I was a stalker, because if you turn up 4 or 5 times in a list, you might look a little like a stalker.
Right.
So I would just contact first with a fairly well-written email, try to move that to a phone conversation really quick, and then out to a first date, because the first date is really, in my opinion, or in my experience, where a connection actually happened and you discover whether it was something was there, or you're better off just kind of saying thank you. And I also I didn't like the coffee or dinner date. I always found that you felt really, really pressured to get really, really in depth. So you'd sit down at coffee and 10 minutes later, so how many divorces was that? How bad has your experience with men been? No, I've had horrible experiences with almost every woman I've ever met. I think we're a great match, at least for the night.
So what does work for you?
For me, what worked was an activity date. It was worth it to me to go bowling or play pool or go to Dave and Buster's or mini golf. It didn't really matter what the activity was. For me, it did two things. One, it provided me the opportunity to see whether how this person really behaved in action as opposed to just sitting there trying to be at their best, because there was something that wasn't me to concentrate on. Plus, when you're sitting there on a coffee date, you're talking, you're trying to find things to talk about. When you're doing an activity, at least 50% of what you're talking about is the activity. So you can have a lot of conversation without there being a lot of pressure. And that enabled you to be more of who you really are versus who you're trying to pretend to be to not scare this person off the date.
Yeah.
But doesn't that get expensive?
It does. And I was the one who was paying for it. But after enough coffee dates, it was worth it to me.
Yeah.
Just because the one way I looked at it was, I'm taking you out. We're going out on a date. Now, I really don't know who you are. I know who you've written, and you don't know who I am because you know what I've written, but that's not who we really are. That's who we think we are. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go out on a date. If I go out shooting pool with you, and if the date's a disaster, most likely I will still have enjoyed my night of playing pool.
Right.
That was worth the investment. Right. I would enjoy it. So the date didn't go well. We're not a match. God, Jen, you're really cute, but it's just not going to work out. I'm so sorry. At least we had fun playing pool.
Right.
That's true.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It does. You know, and I think experiences are more memorable than just a conversation. So it makes sense to me. But what do you do if, like, immediately you feel you don't want to be with this person?
If you walk in, if that person walks in the room and you look at her and she looks at you and you hear, like, wah, wah, wah. Yeah. What do you do? Yeah. Well,
you just find
if you're
activity.
A nice Jewish boy like me, whose mother taught him right, you suffer through that date.
Yeah.
You go through that thing. I had that experience. I've had weird dates, just like everybody's had a weird date. But one of the ones that was, I guess, most tragic for me is I went to Lucky Strike Bowling with this girl. I don't remember her name, and even if I did, I would call her Bob. just because it's not fair to talk about her without her.
Yeah,
like her side.
That's true.
And she was a comedy writer, and she was from Philadelphia, and all of that looked really exciting. And it was her suggestion to go bowling. She didn't want to go to the place I normally go because, well, I have a oddly shaped thumb, and there's like one bowling alley where I know that I'm not going to rip my thumb off. That's where I like to go, but we didn't go there. We went to Lucky Strike in Hollywood and Highland. She walks in, and it looks like she had a bad day. So from the get-go. And she's really dour, and she's really low energy, and she's just talking in a low kind of voice. Mm. And everything she talks about is a problem. It didn't matter what it was. And then, as it turns out, she had hurt her back, and she didn't really want to bowl.
What?
Which, since bowling was her choice or suggestion, was odd. Mm. And we just went through this date, and then we had at dinner, and it just, the entire time, I just couldn't. It was pretty much when I was like, if I was religious, now I would join a seminary after this experience. It just, there was nothing absolutely wrong. She wasn't freaky. She wasn't like god awful. It just was sad and dour. And just, it was sort of like having a wet, prinkly blanket just over you the entire time.
Yeah.
And it was just a chemical mismatch. Cause there's people like, hey, that's a great person. And their pheromones are just not talking to me. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
yeah, it happens. I mean, there's just no connection, no chemistry at all. Yeah.
And I can't speak from the female perspective because I've been born without that that plumbing. But from the male perspective, I know that there's this tendency for a lot of guys to feel like I've got to make it work, or just to hopefully try to make it work. And one of the things that I did is I allowed myself the permission to go like, okay, this isn't happening. And it's okay just to go like, hey, it was really nice to meet you, and kind of leave it at that. And
right.
I had one date where this one girl was just getting back out there, and she was, you could tell she was just getting back out there. And not only that, but she wasn't ready. And so that was actually one of the dinner dates that I had. And I realized quickly on, and so I just began, you know, talking to her and being nice. And then afterwards, I gave her a hug and I told her that I thought she should wait, that, like, you know, don't put yourself out there until you're comfortable. Don't feel just because your friends are telling you you need to get back out there, that you need to get back out there. Yeah. You shouldn't be out there unless you feel that you need to be out there or you want to be out there.
Mm. Yeah.
But
that makes sense. That makes sense. So we're talking to Bruce Nexon, and let's talk a little bit about your film.
Oh, please, let's talk about
my film. Okay. Bruce made a film called Dark Spectre.
The Dark Spectre.
The Dark Spectre. Oh, so tell us a little bit. This is a short film.
It's a short film, though I'm now thinking about expanding it.
Really?
Yes. When I wrote it, Hello, I'm going to start at the beginning. I'm a member of a sketch comedy team called The Mohos, which is Fred Willard's sketch comedy team. And I don't know how I ended up on it, but I'm there. Lucky me.
Where do you guys perform?
We perform at Second City. It's supposed to be like a month, like monthly, every month and a half thing. It's been a little less this year. I think lots of members have been busy.
Well, if you need a sub, I'm available. I went to Second City, too.
Oh,
did you really?
I did.
Yeah.
Wow. Now you know.
Second City. I have a lot of friends who are going through the program right now.
Yeah.
And I
what is Second City then?
It's one of the big three of improv schools in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
So Groundlings and UCB, with UCB, I think, being the most popular currently.
Yeah.
They each have their own different philosophies. Groundlings is all about characterization. UCB is all about playing the game. And Second City is a lot about relationships and playing the reality of the scene. So they each have their own little philosophies all to get to the same place.
Right. So you ended up there.
Yeah, I ended up in the Mohos. And the Mohos, you write these sketches and you put them on. And I wrote for the Mohos this sketch about a superhero and a supervillain and the mother. And it was performed and it was brilliant. So I decided I want to film this. I want to put this to film.
Wow.
And have it.
So did you use like the cast that had performed it there and then put yourself in it?
One of the three members of the cast, the mother, Judy Nazimitz, who is a brilliant actress. She is a wonderful singer. Everybody listening should be Googling her right now. Tell her I sent you. Yeah.
What's her name again?
Judy Nazimitz.
Okay.
And she played the mother. So it was because of her performance as the mother that I was like, I've got to put this on film. I've got to have this.
Right.
I wrote The Dark Spectre for me. I didn't have it performed live by me because I wanted to see how it worked as opposed to, like, when you write something, it's one thing to write it, but if you're trying to perform it, it's different than seeing it in front of you. So I like to write things and then have it performed without me performing it so I can determine what's going on. And then
I see. Then you take the costume on and do it.
So I have it custom made for me, yes.
Right. So
well, the costumes were great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And everything looks great. I mean, you've got some animation on there and everything. So we're talking to Bruce Nexon. The short film is called The Dark Spectre. You guys can actually see this on YouTube if you just Google, I guess, The Dark Spectre.
If you go to YouTube and search for superhero Dark Spectre, it'll be the top of the search. Or supervillain Dark Spectre. I prefer supervillain.
Yeah, there you go. So you decided to make a film. Had you made one before?
I had the very first thing I tried to do, I moved out here, I fell out of actively trying to perform because of my day job. A couple years ago, I got fed up with that and I decided, okay, I'm going to try to learn how to produce something. That's one of the things you hear. People move out here, they want to be a producer. What does a producer do? Nobody knows until they actually try to produce something. So my first step at trying to produce something was a 10-episode multi-camera sitcom called Under the Doghouse, which you can, when you find Dark Spectre, you can find Under the Doghouse, or just look for Under the Doghouse. I will promote like crazy.
Yeah, I see it here. Okay, good. So you've had several episodes of that one.
I made 10 episodes of that, and that was my very first experience of trying to make something. Mm-hmm. I became very close friends with the guy who joined as the cinematographer, a guy named Chris Warren, and we did like a couple other things, a couple spec commercials, we did a couple, like, I think we shot another short or two, helped each other find work, and I adopted them. And then, so when I wanted to do Dark Spectre, I knew, like, he's I've never seen anybody as devoted to, like, really visuals and getting it right. I've never seen somebody love doing that so much. So I was like, dude, let's make a superhero comedy. And he was like, yeah, man. And that's what we did.
Wow, awesome. So you wrote the film.
I wrote it.
And you produced it.
I produced it.
You directed it probably, right?
No.
No?
No. There is a director. There was a director. We had a falling out.
Oh.
And what had happened is I thought that what we were going to have is a collaboration, so that it was going to be a sharing of ideas, and that it would be okay for me to give input of some kind, like, no, I don't like that music, or no, I don't want him to have, like, a fireball fall out of his hand like a limp penis. Right. Like, these are not things I want. I have other things in my head. And the director was not happy, felt that I should just be a writer and actor.
Right.
And eventually it came to a head over music, which I think if you've watched it, the music in it is very good.
Yeah, it adds a lot to the plot.
So there was an idea that was thought about was to have, when the mother comes on, to have a bunch of Seinfeld-esque kind of like boom, ba-da-doom, boom, boom, which I didn't like. And yeah. I mean, I really didn't like, because that's not the feel I was going for. And I thought I just didn't see it. I didn't feel it. And that became you can make your own decisions, or an I leave, or you can do it my way.
Wow.
And that became a,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was nice working with you.
I mean, you can see his point, because directors usually want to have a say and everything. But didn't you, as a producer, doesn't he have to answer to you as the producer?
You'd think. And the person who was on was definitely a brilliant person. They brought a lot to the project. I'm sad that they don't want to be associated with it.
Right.
But it was their choice.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's supposed to be a collaboration.
Yeah.
Unless you're J.J. Abraham or Steven Spielberg. And at that point, you're usually the producer anyway.
Right.
You know, it's usually at least, you know, the producers are giving input.
And right.
So but, you know, once again, very well directed.
Right. So we're not going to tell the listeners what it's about, because it is a short film at 6 minutes, and you don't want to give it away, because it does develop into a very funny thing. So we'll just tease you with the name. It's called The Dark Spectre. Dark Spectre Superhero, or Superheroes Dark
Spectre. It's Dark Spectre. Search Dark Spectre.
Right.
Dark Spectre Supervillain, or Dark Spectre Superhero. You'll find it. You'll love it. Like it.
Share it.
And then you're on Facebook as well. Bruce Naxon. That's NACHSIN. And there's a page on there with some previews and pictures and everything. Now, the funding for the film, how did you manage that?
Well, you know that day job we were talking about?
Right.
That's where I funded it from.
Wow. So from your own money?
It was my own money. However, I will say that I lucked out incredibly. The amount I paid for things was far less than I should have, especially the special effects.
Mm.
The VFX artist, Art, I cannot pronounce his last name to save my life.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot more letters than I'm used to dealing with. He came on, and he was a professional VFX artist. He worked for different, on a lot of commercial stuff, and his stuff was brilliant. It looked great. He did this, there was this telescope, and there was an exploded view, and it was amazing. And he responded to my ad for a VFX artist, and I couldn't really pay much of anything.
Right.
I'm not going to say how much I paid, unless people expect him to work for that, because
right.
He should never, ever, ever work for that little amount of money ever again in his life.
Wow. So why did he do it? He really believed in the project.
I think he had wanted to do a superhero thing.
Oh.
I think he liked it. It was an opportunity for him. It fit within what he wanted to do, so he wanted to do it.
Right.
And of all the people, like, he lived with the project more than anybody else. There was a deadline we were trying to hit. We missed it. He took a week off of work.
Wow.
To try to hit that deadline. And his work is amazing. And I can't say enough about how indebted I am to Art.
Yeah.
And then there's also the sound. There was a guy named Vince Tennant. He did the sound. And through YouTube, the sound sounds really good, if I do say so myself on his behalf. But when I went to his actual studio, which we mixed it in a room that was meant for theatrical releases, like, and there's like a 5.1 surround soundtrack of the stuff. It's amazing, the sheer quality of it. And he did it because he's a friend like that. I got, if he charged me for it, it would have been $10,000 worth of sound work that he gave me because I think he just thinks I'm a swell guy.
Oh, there you go. You know,
it helps being swell.
It helps being swell.
Yeah.
Back to the dating thing.
Well, so so that's good. I mean, your project attracted a lot of great talent and stuff, and that's very good. You know, I mean,
what caused your deadlines? Did you submit it to festivals, or what happened?
No, what was causing the deadlines is I was trying to coincide it with superhero movie releases. So we really, really wanted to hit Avengers Age of Ultron because that would have been a perfect synergistic... I can speak English very well. Synergistic time to have this release.
Right.
Not even close. Then thought Fantastic Four, which, considering how that went, it's good we missed that. And then finally it was like, well, it's done. Let's get it out. Now, we have put it into festivals. I think I've submitted to like 13 or 14 of them, but none of the exclusive ones. So, like, I couldn't submit it to New York Film Festival because then I couldn't release it. And it's a it's a six-minute short. It's a comedy short. Holding it off for 9 months to release it didn't seem to be really worth it.
Right. Wow, that's pretty cool. So now, people, if you want to watch the show, again, it's Dark Spectre Superhero or Supervillain. You can look it up on YouTube. And it's a very funny film. Now, I mean, you already got over 3,000 views. That's pretty good. So how do you go about getting the views? I mean, did you do any promotion?
I did as much promotion as I could myself, reached out. What I have done recently, actually last week, is I've hired a PR person because I do want to try to get it pushed out. I feel it has it's a very high quality. I feel like with Under the Doghouse, I was very proud of it, but that was my very first thing. There are flaws. There are problems with it. Under the Doghouse, I think, looks like a professional piece of film fell out of a film.
Really?
Wow. Like, well, that's my opinion. I could be a little biased. I wouldn't believe you if you told me I was biased, but I could be.
So Under the Doghouse is also available on YouTube. People can see that, right?
Yes.
And how many episodes did you make of that one?
10.
10? Wow.
Yes.
How long did it take you to make an episode?
We shot them together, so it was actually 4 weeks of weekend shooting. And then putting it all together, editing it, just getting the pieces, that took another 6 months. So we shot it in across March, and then it was finally released in October, I think 2011.
Mm.
How long are each episode?
Each episode, it varies a little bit. They're all shooting for about 5-6 minutes, but one or two of them go like 8-9 minutes.
Got it.
They were a little too complex to edit them down.
And like, so what's this series about?
Under the Doghouse?
Yeah.
Under the Doghouse is about a guy named Pete who is just unlucky in his work, women, just he's the perennial loser that I wrote for
under
myself.
Under the Doghouse.
Thus, Under the Doghouse.
Is there a happy ending?
Not really.
Oh.
Is there an ending to it, though? I mean, did you have a beginning and an end, or did you just leave it as a cliffhanger or something? Or
it sort of feels like it. It feels a little like it wraps up. They were kind of episodic type things. I wasn't really looking for a really big overarching final conclusion. Yeah.
Right. So more like sitcoms. It
was very much a sitcom. And the idea was maybe do a second season if it caught on. Now, unfortunately, what had happened is I put it up on the page recently. When I originally released it, I had gotten PR a year later. And they told me take down the original page and start fresh. And thus, all the original views are gone. So now, like, each episode looks like it's got 10 views.
Well, right.
They had thousands of views at one point, but now they don't.
Right.
But the idea was if it took off, that do a second season if it was successful. But it was a lot of work for the amount of traction it had gotten. I enjoy it. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about art. I mean, you do things for yourself. You don't really think, okay, well, will people buy this or people buy that? Unless you're a commercial artist or something, you know. But when you're trying to express yourself in movies and books or whatever, you know, music, you know, you want to... What do you want to do?
I think you want to express yourself. However, I would say that I agree with that. However, there's a part that you should be considering, which is to a degree of palatability. So you're putting all this effort and time into your art. And if you're just looking to put your art out there in a vacuum, I'm doing this for me, this is what I'm doing, that's fine. But let's say, which most artists are doing, is I'm doing this. This is an expression of me that I want you to partake of. Mm-hmm. I want you to be part of this. You need to be part of this with me. However, it's all mine. You do need to at least be cognizant of your viewers. Let's say, I have a friend who does quality control for Netflix, and he's put it this way. He's watched a lot of really good 90-minute movies that ended up really being shitty 3-hour movies.
Wow.
I mean, I shouldn't have said that word.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
No, it's fine.
Because, you know, people are so in love with their ideas that they don't possess the ability to edit. Mm. And it's really good to have the ability to edit. Yes, you should be striving for art. No, you shouldn't be thinking about how to make this palatable for everybody at all times, because you can't do that. But you also can't produce the brown bunny over and over again. You can't just put up every like little mind dripping you happen to have because you think it's brilliant. The ability to self-edit, the ability to see it from the outside view is important, because it's great, like that Dark Specter is funny, but I have to be able to see it. To see that it's funny, I had to see it from the audience side, not just from what's rolling around in my head.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so you approached it like a business proposition, pretty much. I mean, you obviously want to monetize your work. You know,
yes.
Nobody wants to work for free and everything. So, I totally understand that, and it's great you were able to fund it yourself. You know, then you don't have to answer to people that tell you do this, do that.
Yes, though, if I continue it, I'm not going to be able to fund the continuation, because. Right. Art, like I said, art worked incredibly hard for very little money.
Right.
So my idea now is to expand out the story and the story in my head to 5 episodes, and use that 5 episodes to complete a story arc that presents itself as a pilot. So then I can pitch it and actually have somebody pay me to do it, because I really, really want to be a supervillain.
Yeah.
More than anything else. Yeah. I don't care about being a hero, but I just love the idea of being a supervillain. That's just so much fun. And since I'm not going to wait around for somebody to say, hey, we've got this part for you, I'm going to create it myself.
Yeah.
But it needs to be high quality, because the bar we've set is fairly high. That's going to cost a lot of money to get the effects across 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Even if the episodes are only 4 minutes, it's still going to be a lot of effects. It's going to be tons of money.
Right.
So
you can fit a lot into 4 minutes of film, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and also you got to be aware of the nature of YouTube, because like one of the problems with Under the Doghouse is the episode started at 5 minutes, which is kind of YouTube long,
right.
And then went to 8 minutes, which is YouTube JFK level of viewing. So the next episodes of Dark Specter, when I make them, will be shorter, just because that's the medium that they're in.
Right. And people don't have much longer attention span than that, probably.
Oh, no. We worked really hard over the past, like, 30 years to whittle that down.
Yeah. Well, Bruce Nexon, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody go out and check out the Dark Specter. It's available on YouTube. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter to find Bruce. His last name is Nachsin. And please support the film, you know, at least just watch it. So you can tell your friends. I mean, I think it's a unique little movie, and I enjoyed it a lot. And
I did too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That makes my morning. And thank you for having me on. And afterwards, we should go get coffee or something.
Yeah, that's true. Huh? It's coffee day today.
It is coffee day.
Yeah. All right, Bruce. Well, thank you so much for joining us. All the best to you. Much success. And come back and let us know how the future works out for you.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for all the dating tips and everything,
yes,
too.
Yes,
not a problem. We'll talk later.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you tomorrow.
You're
listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.